This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
I'm Christina Musan.
And in for John Broski, I'm Matt Otstadt.
One of my best friends is a May the 4th baby.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so we typically celebrate her birthday on Cinco de Mayo.
Is her name Leia?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
We celebrate her birthday on Cinco de Mayo. We are all vaccinated this year.
Hey.
And decided we're going out. Right.
Okay.
We know it's Cinco de Mayo. We understand. Make reservations a month in advance.
All right.
Okay. For a spot.
I applaud that.
Yeah. Well, you kind of have to in today's world.
You kind of.
And, you know, we're going to sit outside. So it's very minimal, you know, risk.
Yeah, it was a little warm.
It wasn't too bad when the sun went down.
Right.
And go to a wonderful spot. And I want to preface this. This discussion is not at all bashing the restaurant or any restaurant out there.
No, because they're all in the same boat.
They're all in the same boat. And it's just something that I experienced. I've been reading these stories about shortages in restaurant staffing for weeks now. Mm-hmm. You know, I have not really experienced it because...
You hadn't been out much.
We hadn't been out much.
Right.
And I go, like, if we're going to go, we do a takeout situation. Mm-hmm. And we bring it back home usually. So for me, this was one of the few situations where we went out to a restaurant. And you know, going out on Cinco de Mayo anyways, that it's going to be busy.
Yeah.
You
expect it to be busy.
And by the way, happily, it was busy.
Good.
I say that with happiness and enthusiasm because this pandemic, restaurants have been through so much already. So you're going in with eyes wide open here.
Sure.
Very hopeful that they're going to be busy. They were.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we experienced. Order a drink. And after 45 minutes, after 30 minutes, we followed up with our server and said, hey, we ordered a drink 30 minutes ago. He said, listen, we only have one bartender. We could only get one bartender to work tonight. So we've got one bartender serving a restaurant of people inside and outside. And so it's going to be a minute.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got our drinks after an hour.
Jeez.
Okay. So that was now the food, they had shortened the menu and the drink menu was shortened too.
Right.
It wasn't as if there was a huge long menu in this, you know, it was, they knew what they were getting into.
Sheer volume though.
They knew what they were getting into. They had shortened their own menu, the bar menu, because, you know, it's Cinco de Mayo. Food actually came out in a rather timely manner.
Right.
I mean, a little bit longer than normal, but not like the drinks were. It was, I mean, the frustration on, people were frustrated. Servers were frustrated.
Oh,
I have to imagine it is very difficult being in the restaurant industry right now. Being a server, here you are, the people that you worked with maybe aren't coming back because, I don't know, they're getting paid more to work. And here you
are. It's not cost effective for them to come back right now.
Right. Here you are choosing to work, busting your butt, right? And people don't seem to understand that.
Well, yeah, and then through no fault of their own because of shortages and backlog. And it's that double-edged sword. So many people are chomping at the bit. And you and I talked about this when we were prepping for the show this morning. So many people are chomping at the bit. They've been cooped up for so long. They want to go out.
Yeah, they want to get out.
They've got their vaccination. The weather is nice. They want to go out. They want to eat. They want to go to their favorite spots again. So everyone's going. And there's few people. So the servers that are working, now you got a group of PO'd people that may not be inclined to tip, so that's money out of their pocket.
Exactly. And that's, you know, so we're sitting there last night and I'm trying to explain to the table, like, the server was frustrated and you could see the frustration on the server's face as well because we weren't the only table who it was taking an hour to get drinks to. It was every table, right?
I'm sure your table was probably a little more civil in their...
We had a discussion at the table about it because I said, you can see that, you know, restaurants are having a hard time. This is what we're experiencing right now this shortage.
Right.
And, you know, I look at this and I'm just thankful that this server showed up to work today.
Right. But my point is some people might not be as classy about handling it and people with short tempers get a little more irate a little faster and not quite as understanding.
Well, and people with one drink in them waiting for their second drink. Right?
I know that person.
You understand that? Like, you know, you not only did you wait the hour for your first drink, but you know now that it's going to be another hour for the second drink to come. So then you're like a little,
Well, and then
you know, you got a little buzz maybe, and you want the second drink now.
But then what that happens, that creates a backlog because then some people say, all right, it takes so long. I'm ordering multiple drinks at a
time. Yes, and that's what we ended up doing.
So then that further compounds the issue because now an already stressed single bartender is making more drinks for as many people in the same amount of time.
My heart goes out to every restaurateur out there because, like I said, I have been reading about this for weeks. This was the first time I had experienced it, and it is a real thing.
Well, and just think, Christina, that those restaurateurs that managed to survive the last 13 months, because there are some, unfortunately, that have not. So you made it through this whole pandemic. Finally, Uncle Gavin up in Sacramento in his ivory tower says, yes, you may go back to work. So you're finally going back to work. You're ordering your inventory. You're getting everything there. You're welcoming customers back, friends you haven't seen in so long.
And you can't find people to work.
Yep. And you're screwed that way.
So you've got people willing to come.
Mm-hmm. People willing to give you money. You have an opportunity to make back some of that money
and
that you lost.
And yet
you're just facing it. Here, push this boulder uphill with your nose again.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I was talking with Mike Sherinian this morning, and you know, he was talking about, he said, you know, this is not just the only industry. He said it's every industry out there is faced. This is government against businesses right now, because as the government continues to extend unemployment benefits, every business is experiencing this. He was telling me stories about how he talks with friends in other industries where they will go through the process. Mm-hmm. They will interview someone. They will go through all the hoops and hurdles California puts in place for you to be able to hire somebody.
Stand on one foot, balance
these
plates.
Make the offer.
Yes.
Person accepts the offer and then doesn't show up because why?
They can make more money at home.
Because they're just providing that as proof to unemployment that they're afraid to go back to work, therefore extend my benefits. I got a job offer, but I'm afraid to go back. Give me more money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that costs an employer time, which costs money. Well, so you're facing a lot of hurdles right now as an employer, and the state and the feds aren't doing very much to help you.
No, and the state and the feds don't care because they're both democratically controlled. And as long as they have more people living off the dole, they are beholden to the government. Therefore, they are more inclined to keep the individuals that are putting money in their pocket in office so they don't have to get off their ass to work. That's the bottom line.
490-5858, 490-5858. If you want to weigh in on this, are you an employer? Are you a restaurateur of any industry? Hiring right now, you know, it's a tough thing. And I experienced it in a restaurant last night. My husband does the hiring for our family business. You know, everybody's experiencing this to different degrees and levels.
And it's not necessarily just in restaurant.
In every industry.
Having a conversation with my father-in-law, who is not in the restaurant business, but is a business co-owner in Madera County. And, you know, some of the temp workers that he contracts with, I mean, it's physical, hands-on labor. It's a lumber yard. But sometimes they just... Guy here one day, gone the next. That's just too hard. I can make more money at home. And doesn't show up to work.
This is a thing. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Lorraine Salazar of Sal's Mexican Restaurant, because she actually has gone about this in a very interesting way that I like her creativity. And there are a lot of restaurateurs out there kind of doing along the same lines as she is. So
this is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Joining us on the phones now is Lorraine Salazar of Sal's Mexican Restaurant. And Lorraine, I have in my notes here as well, you're also the current chairperson of the California Restaurant Association state board. So, wow, Impressive resume. But Lorraine, you know, Matt and I were talking about, as we all get vaccinated and start heading back out into the real world, into life kind of once again, There is definitely a shortage of employees, not just for the restaurant industry, but for many industry out there. And I just thought it was interesting. You're kind of doing something over there at Sal's to incentivize people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Good morning to both of you. And let me just make a correction. I am the second past chair of the state association. I want to give kudos to Madeline Alfano from Maria's Italian Kitchen, who is our current chair. So I just like to correct that. Mm-hmm. But I am very involved with our state board, as is Mike Sherinian, and as is Chuck Van Fleet of Vino Grill as well here in town. So, you know, together we have been facing the same issues. We talk about the issues. We're getting calls from our fellow colleagues in the industry and letting them know, you know, what the California Restaurant Association is doing to assess things. But on the local level, what we're doing at Sal's is we had started an employee referral program several years ago. And what we do is it was to incentivize our team members to recommend people that they really want to work with, that are going to put in the same amount of effort that they're putting into the job, that's going to make it a fun place to work. And it's a great, you know, tool for us to be able to recruit people. Now, during the pandemic year, we did need to tweak. We tweaked this program and we rolled it back out 30 days ago, and we are already seeing some fruits of that retweaked program. And what we did is we extended the time that we will have a bonus award for the referral out to 6 months. Most companies, if they have that type of program, are doing a 30, 60, 90 day program, and mostly that's for the person who they're hiring. But we turned this around and said, no, this is for our team members, because they're coming in contact with people all the time and referring people, and we want them to be vested in the success of the new hire that they have recommended. So we're going to reward them.
As well you should.
As well as they should. I mean, we're blessed to have, you know, people that have been with us longevity, but we also, you know, saw a great attrition during this pandemic year. When it started last March, and we had to lay off 120 employees. And then through that, when we called back in June, there was attrition because certainly there were moms and dads that needed to stay home with their kids for that remaining of the distance learning, and then through the summer. And then when we were to open back up in the red tier or for outdoor dining in July, there were some other challenges, and you saw some more attrition. And then there were other industries that were taking from the restaurant industry because they offered more stability that weren't in the open and closing, but they were part of the essentials. And that was the grocery stores and the Instacart drivers and the DoorDashes and the Ubers. And other retail where they felt that there was more stability. So, you know, now we're able to opening up at 50% and, you know, maybe moving on to 75%, but we can't staff to be able to serve that capacity because now we'd have people because of attrition, and then we have others that are gainly having rich unemployment benefits and aren't wanting to come back just yet. But I predict that come, you know, August, they're going to start looking for jobs because that's when the federal unemployment additional payment ends. And unless Congress extends that. And so what we need to be doing is talking to our congressional leaders and our state senators and saying, you know, when did unemployment become a career path?
Yeah, no kidding. Talking with the great Lorraine Salazar of Sal's. Lorraine, I just want to stop you right there because you mentioned August. Obviously, you know, talking with your counterparts and your colleagues in the restaurant industry, not just here in the Valley, but across the state, we've lost quite a few due to COVID. Now you're saying if they can, you know, this comes to an end in August, we're going to lose more businesses because some just can't hold out through the summer. So then what do they do?
Well, that's correct if they don't have the people, because as you mentioned in your discussion, there is a pent-up demand to come out and eat, certainly as people are getting vaccinated.
Your taquitos are too good. What can I say?
Thank you. And the businesses certainly, you know, have been losing money, or if they were shut down for periods, you know, they are needing to recover. They want to take advantage of this, but they're needing to look at changing their business models. And I know several that have said, I'm going to maintain a takeout or move to a fast casual business model because it requires me to have less employees in order to be able to service my customers. So, you know, or they're making decisions to close a day or shorten their hours. All of these changes are being implemented by restaurateurs across the state, and including here in the Valley.
Lorraine, you had mentioned, sorry to cut you off there. You had mentioned, though, capacity. And, you know, with the tiers, there's more capacity allowed, 50, 75.
Yellow, mauve, magenta.
But you may not necessarily have the staff for something like that. What is Sal's currently, you know, staffed for roughly, you know, based upon what we're allowed? Are you able to meet the criteria right now?
We're struggling to meet that criteria at the 50%. And so we are closing our Selma restaurant on Tuesdays. That's our original. And originally, if we go back over 30 years ago, it was a tradition that we were always known for being closed on Tuesdays. And then we opened up to a 7-day-a-week operation. And so for the last month, the beginning of April, we made the decision to close that location on Tuesdays. And with that, because we needed to give our staff a rest, we're running very much with skeleton crews. And so we needed to give them a rest. And that's the decision that was made for Selma. We have been able to maintain both in Fresno and Madera, the locations, working the 7 days. But we are looking, as we get through the graduations through June, through the mid-June, then we're going to take a look at, you know, for that summertime period, picking a day that we're going to close. And it may just be Tuesdays all across the board. You have other restaurants in town that are closing various days as well, either a Monday or a Tuesday, or maybe they're not serving lunch and they're just focusing on a dinner hour, or they are, you know, having limited hours and maybe taking it down to one shift and they're to cover lunch and part of dinner. Maybe they're only open 11 to 7.
Lorraine, what can you say with that schedule? What can you say to the frustrated customer?
Because that's exactly what I was going to ask.
Christina and I were talking about, people are chomping at the bit. They're getting out there, and then they're sitting and they're waiting, and then they reflect it in their tip, which just hurts the server. So you have been in the restaurant business since birth. Not that you're that old.
Yes.
But to the customers out there.
Just 10 years.
Yeah, just 10 years. She's not quite as she's younger than we are, and I'm going to espouse that till the day I die. But what can you say to those folks that, I mean, it's easy enough for us to say there and like, you know, please don't get frustrated. We're trying to do the best we can. But just from the restaurateur's perspective, talking to all those customers, what is the message you want to get out to them?
Well, the message I want to get out to them is to say that we appreciate all the support that you gave us during the year of massive change for, you know, our entire nation and our industry. We ask for you to continue with patience as we are ramping up. But if you can help us find good people, you know, and you know that somebody who's looking for a job, you know, refer them to your favorite restaurant because you want to be able to come out and have that dining experience. And so one of the, you know, we're an industry that's known as an industry of first opportunities and an industry of second chances. We are an industry that employs the highest number of women in the industry, moms because we have flexible hours, college students because we have flexible hours, minorities, where our industry is 60% minorities that are in leadership positions and working in our business. And so what I say is if you know somebody who's looking for a position, refer them to your favorite restaurant. Give them an opportunity to get a job and give your restaurant an opportunity to be able to hire them and to be able to stay in business and give the service in the manner that which you are accustomed to. So that's what I can say to our dining public. Thank you and refer. But also we ask for your patience and understanding that, you know, things may take a little bit longer. And your experience yesterday, Christina,
yeah.
I mean, Cinco de Mayo in a Mexican restaurant is totally, you know, can be three times the amount of normal business that they would experience. And certainly, you know, you saw limited menus and so, you know, everybody's doing the best that they can. I was physically in a restaurant, worked 12 hours yesterday, just on our to-go side of the menu. And so other challenges that are happening is they may decide that maybe we're not going to do third-party delivery on this day and we're going to shut it off. I think you're going to see a lot of that happening on Mother's Day, on Sunday coming up.
Yes, and in fact, I've read about that as well. Lorraine Salazar, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Always
thank
a pleasure.
You. Always good talking with you. Yeah, thanks. You know, she's right, though. You know, Cinco de Mayo is typically a busy day anyways.
Yep.
You got to have patience right now, though. I loved that when we asked her, Matt, you know, what do you say to the patrons? She said, well, if you know someone that's looking for a job, refer them to your favorite restaurant.
Absolutely.
I love that.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
And thanks again to Lorraine Salazar, who joined us in the last segment of the show.
The only problem about having Lorraine Salazar...
It makes you hungry.
And thinking about, you know, because I live a stone's throw from the Sal's location in Madera, and I'm thinking, that's on the way home.
Yeah, and if you really loved your wife, you'd pick her up lunch, too.
Yes,
I'm just throwing that out there for you. But, you know, we were talking about, with Lorraine, we were talking about staffing shortages.
Absolutely.
And went out for a girlfriend's birthday last night, mm-hmm. not to Sal's, a different restaurant, and we experienced it. And, you know, having read all the stories that I read,
right.
I knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that there was a staffing shortage,
sure.
right? And that people, the servers that were there, thank you. Thank you for showing up to work so that your employer can do business and continue to operate.
Right. It's like the adage, those that show up to work, if they had two backsides, they would have worked them both off.
But not everybody knew that, you know, and not everybody understood that the one bartender working the bar, you know, that was a real thing. It's nothing on the restaurateur.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they are having a tough time staffing now. And that's... not just restaurants. You know, Mike Sherinian told me earlier this morning, he said, I have friends in every industry
through
this right now.
It's across the board. And it's that level of frustration that people were so elated to be out of the house. They've gotten their vaccinations and they can experience what Braveheart referred to as your freedom. But to not have the level of service and everything that they experienced back to where it was before the pandemic. They're just hoping to get outside. Everything is back to normal. And it's not going to be like that.
And that's another tough... That's a great point that you bring up. Because the restaurant that we went to, we had eaten at just before everything got shut down.
And it was...
phenomenal.
Absolutely.
You know, great. And so you're thinking that's the experience you're going to have. The reality is that you're going to have a modified experience, especially on busy days.
Oh, yeah.
Lorraine said, like, Mother's Day, don't expect, like, takeout type stuff and other, because they are going to be stretched thin to
right.
begin with. There are going to be modifications going forward until these unemployment benefits stop being extended and people get motivated to go back to work.
Well, and the other thing Lorraine shared with us is the current run of benefits doesn't expire until August.
Correct.
Dear God.
Correct.
Right through the busy summer months. So all of you businesses that are looking to hire and trying to recoup some money in your summer months, good luck.
Gotta love it to her, though, because we said, what can patrons do? She said, well, if you know somebody looking for a job, refer them to your favorite restaurant. That is, yes, yeah. You know, or any favorite business at this point.
To put it a different way, can you serve up some employment candidates for us? We'll give you good food. You serve up employment candidates.
490-5858. Michael, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Morning, Michael.
Good morning. Hey, guys. So what I saw in the news, well, actually, overall, I knew that apparently restaurants and other businesses are now paying applicants to come in and apply. And there was a news item yesterday where it showed a McDonald's back east somewhere. And on their marquee, it said, apply for a job, get $50. I mean, cash.
It's like it's a signing bonus, basically. Yeah, it's the same thing that pro sports
do. You know, I've got in my story here, it says Cattleman's in Selma is offering a sign-on bonus for new employees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have to sweeten the deal somehow. You know, what was interesting is when I was talking to Sherinian this morning, he said, you know, if you're going to spend money on unemployment benefits, give it to me, the employer,
right,
so that I can do these things. Because I've already, think about this. They had to put up tents in the middle of winter.
Extra
that cost. Somebody told me cost sometimes up to $10,000 a month just to have up.
Oh, absolutely.
They put them up.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got shut down again.
Lost
those
money.
Tents stayed up. They still had to pay for the tents.
More money.
They're still paying their rent or leases.
More money.
Right? More money. And then they get to open back up. But now they've got staffing shortages. Well, so so they're already at a lower capacity. Lorraine said, what you can be at, is it 50% capacity inside right now?
Yeah, because
we're in orange.
Okay.
And she doesn't even have enough people to staff 50% capacity. Mm. So even if she wanted to do that 50%, she couldn't because she doesn't have enough staff for them.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are. You're just doing your best. You've spent all this money to remain open through this pandemic. And now the government's working against you. If you're going to go spend money for unemployment benefits, give it to them so that they can pay those people to go to work.
Well, and it's sort of like the next big kind of, you know, screw you from your elected officials. And I'm not talking about all elected officials. I'm talking about those that shut you down. And now those that have approved the unemployment that's taking your employees away. The adage I used is, okay, continue to push this boulder up this hill with your nose.
Right.
And Godspeed. You know, what else is going to happen? And Lorraine alluded to it, and I hope to God it doesn't happen, but they could extend these unemployment benefits.
They could. And her point is that you need to call your congresspeople to let them know that you don't want that. You can't survive this way.
And at what cost? Think of how many, not just restaurants, but how many businesses we have lost in the last 13 months across the gamut of industries that just, they either said, we're done, or they just said, we can't go on, or they just, through no fault of their own, ran out of money. That's going to happen more and more with this free-flowing funds of your state unemployment, the federal unemployment. Thank you, Uncle Joe. And I can make more money sitting on my backside eating Cheetos watching cartoons than I can getting up, shaving, putting on a nice piece of clothing, and actually going out and earning a living. There is absolutely no incentive for me to get my backside off my Barca lounger right now. There is none. And my heart goes out to all these businesses that are chomping at the bit to try to make money. Some of these mom and pop shops, some of these restaurants that's been in the family for years, that they're finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And you know what? Unfortunately for you, from Sacramento, it's a train right now. Not a high-speed train,
nope,
but a train.
We may get into that actually later on in the show today.
Good.
490-5858. Robert, you're on KMJ.
Morning, Robert.
Hi, good morning. Hey, I just wanted to put a little different spin on why I would understand why people stay on unemployment.
Go ahead.
And it's been many years. I'm in the housing industry. And in 2008, I lost my job. I got unemployment, and I got the maximum benefits. Then I found another job, and the way they report quarterly for your unemployment benefits, I went from the maximum to $60 a week. And to get kicked even harder then, you know, back in those days I was paying child support, I tried to get that reduced because now I'm making almost nothing, and the county has a stipulation that you have to give them 3 months worth of your income. So you fall into arrears, and then they take away your driver's license. There's so many layers of what is messed up with our systems. I don't blame people for staying at home.
You know, that's you make a good point in that my frustration with government is that government tries to micromanage so much that in doing so, they make it so complicated.
Sure. You're damned
everything
if you do and damned if you
so
don't.
Everything is so in the weeds.
Yeah.
And if you could just
get out of the way,
people would take care of themselves. You know, my kids are taking swim lessons. You know what's amazing?
What?
I mean, this is like the third year now.
Okay. So they know how to turn over and float and everything else.
Yeah. And so at the beginning of this year, every year I say, God, you know, it's like, I hope it's like riding a bike. It is.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you give them the basics and they remember. It's the riding the bike analogy. It's right. Like riding a bike. We, for the most part, we know, we have instincts of how to best take care of ourselves.
Right.
It's a part of our instinct.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is the, and I'm going to use this, is the excuse of fear of COVID still a legitimate excuse to stay on unemployment?
Great question. No.
I
No, it's
God
not.
No, it's not. You're absolutely 100%.
Because if you're so afraid,
right.
If you're so afraid, mm-hmm. you can go get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And you can be 95% protected.
Yeah.
And there you go. And if you don't want to get the vaccine, that's okay too. But there are lots of people out there getting the vaccine, mm-hmm. which is protecting you as well.
Right.
So to me, this, you need to start... It was our discussion last night at the dinner table. One of the things is getting back to normal and how strange that is.
Yeah.
How
well, and there are some people that don't want to. They
right.
like they're just so encapsulated in their bubble.
Somebody,
they're so afraid to try to get back to normal because they think everything's going to kill them.
Somebody was talking about the mask thing, mm-hmm. and they said, you know, it took me like a month after being vaccinated to take the mask off outside. I knew that it was, I knew to take my mask off around other people. I was vaccinated. And they said, it's just this mental barrier that, you know, some people face getting back. Here we are a year. We've been trained to do all this stuff. Now we're being told it's okay to start doing other things, and getting back into that takes some time too.
Oh yeah. Cause we have to realize before we got vaccinated, you've been indoctrinated.
That's true.
And you basically need to deprogram.
You've been scared.
Exactly.
You've been scared into one thing. And now they're telling you, it's okay. You can get back on the bike. And you're going, wait, why, what? I can't. It doesn't feel right. But it is true. So, no, if you are using the excuse for unemployment now that it's because you're afraid of COVID, that's no longer an excuse.
Yeah, that's bunk. Get off your butt. Go back to work.
And in fact, the state of California has basically said to me, why after June 15th? You could still use it as an excuse, I think, as I don't know why. Because the state of California has basically said we will reach herd immunity June 15th.
And this morning, and so much so that Blake Taylor asked for the doctor's information from our sister station up in the Bay Area, a doctor from UCSF basically verifying that, yeah, June 15th, we'll reach herd immunity. I have every indication that's going to be like that. So what I'm hearing then is after June 15th, even though the unemployment benefits go through August, there should be absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be able to achieve full staffing at any one of your businesses, right?
Yeah. I mean, no more excuses to me should be granted
right.
at that time.
Unless you're a lazy, timid Lothario that is looking for every excuse,
you know,
not to work and to cash a check.
When we come back, though, I mean, we'll talk about this because...
it's called freeloading.
Tipping.
Yeah.
Is another aspect of this. And I want to get into tipping really quickly, too.
Please do.
And the way that California messes with stuff.
Sure.
Okay.
Their hands are in all pockets.
490-5858, 490-5858. If you want to weigh in on this, experiencing difficulties hiring people, been to a restaurant lately and experienced the staff shortage.
Let us know.
Yeah.
You
want to there
tout
are plenty your, of business
You want to tout your
hiring.
Skills? We'll give you 10 seconds.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Staffing shortages in the restaurant industry, but every industry as it is, because
help wanted.
You can make more on unemployment than you can going back to work, especially at a restaurant, right? We've got some calls, so let's get to them before top of the hour here. So, James, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Morning, James.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to speak up because I just don't understand what happened to doing a job well done and, you know, going to work and feeling you did a good job and what it does to your self-esteem that you've done your best work. And I mean, opposed to sitting at home and collecting unemployment. I mean, what is this doing for one's self-esteem? My kids, they all know that you get up and you work and you come home tired. That's the best rest you mm-hmm. get is when you've done a great job. What do these people do telling their kids, What, Daddy, what do you do? Well, I sit at home and I get a check in the mail.
I play Fortnite.
I mean,
yeah, well, you know, that's a great point because there's no better reward than a job well done.
Right, but Christina, it is the deterioration of the societal norms and this proliferation of I'm privileged, me, 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 what's in it for me? Oh, I can make money. You're going to give me money and I don't have to work. Yay, yay, yay.
I think there are a couple things going on here. I think that for some people, it is maybe they have children
mm-hmm.
and children have not been allowed to go to school.
Okay.
So here you are, you're making $500-$600 a week on unemployment.
Right.
An opportunity is presented for you to go back to work. In order for you to go back to work, you've got to find somebody child to be care. With the kids, mm-hmm. right?
And child care is expensive.
And so therefore, it's it doesn't pencil out for you.
But
and
I would
you're
argue,
being afforded an opportunity here to not work, right. and it's you're going to end up making money in the end.
But I would argue that's the exception, not the rule.
There Maybe. Are, th- I think there that there are a number that, of different scenarios.
Right, but I would argue the majority of those shining a seat with their backsides aren't mothers and childcare issues. Some are just lazy slugs that are just going to live off the dole.
Well, there's that too. And maybe the, you know, 20 somethings who are just living the life, right? The government's paying me not to work and they're just enjoying the life. Larry, you're on KMJ.
Morning, Larry.
Good morning. Your call screener kind of filled me in on a little bit, how things have changed lately or over the years. But, I just going to comment on the unemployment. Years ago, I had a business, and this is in the 70s and 80s, and well, I had it up until 2000, but 70s and 80s, I would get people that would come into the shop and ask for a job, or ask me to, you know, if they had a job available. Well, it didn't apply to them. My business didn't apply to them, and, you know, they pretty well probably knew it, but, you know, so what? Anyway, they had to have so many, back then, as I remembered, they had to have so many looking for jobs.
Right.
And having people sign them.
Right.
3 to 5 a week, that comes to my mind. I don't know for sure. But anyway, 3 to 5, something like that. And then I'm pretty sure that if you did take unemployment, get unemployment, or get a job, you didn't have to take less at the job than you would at your previous job. In other words, if you were making $200 a week at your previous job and you walked into a shop or something and they offered you $100 a week, you didn't have to take that because mm-hmm. it was less than what you were making before. So you could go on unemployment. And a lot of them, that's what they were looking for. Anyway, that's kind of my comment on it.
Okay.
Things have changed, and I know there's too much to do now.
Well,
you know?
And Larry, while you were talking, you kind of set off something in my mind that, do you know why unemployment was created?
Are you asking Larry or me?
In general, unemployment was not created to be a means of sustainment long term.
Yes.
Unemployment was meant to be a stopgap for you to collect while seeking gainful employment elsewhere. It was not meant to be a career choice.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Tracy, you've patiently waited. And I'd like to get you on the air. So you'll be the last call on this, and then we're going to move on to high-speed rail. So, Tracy, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Morning, Tracy.
Morning. I was just calling in to say, you know, if these people would be looking for careers instead of jobs, they would know that, you know, they'll make more money working than what unemployment offers them. You know, most of them are out there just trying to get a job. Well, a job is a stepping stone to your career, you know, so people that are making more money on unemployment, and I understand they got kids and stuff. I raised 3 kids. I worked fast food when I was in college and stuff. There's, you know, people that are out there that are going to do those jobs, but they should be stepping stones to your career. You know, if you're, you know,
such,
you want your career
yes.
to...
Such a good way of looking at it. Such a good way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just a job. It's a stepping stone to a career. Just really quickly, you know, you and I met working in this business.
Yep. TV, not radio.
TV, not radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got into TV because I graduated college, didn't know what I was going to do, had a degree in journalism and thought maybe I should use that. Moved home, called everybody in my cell phone to see if they knew somebody that worked at a TV station.
Mm-hmm.
They did. They knew somebody at KMPH. And they were starting this new show called Great Day. Ever heard of it?
Nope.
And they needed somebody in the middle of the night to come in and basically like get things.
Mm.
Like sweep floors, coffee, whatever.
It's called a lackey.
Yep. And I took that job. No second thought. Absolutely, I'll do that job. No problem.
Got your foot in the door.
Got my foot in the door. you know, I could see if I actually liked doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a degree in something, you don't always like that.
Right.
And then from there, you know, the joke was, is like Christina went from sweeping the floors to being a writer and then a producer all within like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then from being a producer, I decided I wanted to be on air. So I moved away. I got on air. I was there for a year in Washington State. I moved back to be on air here.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I'm not enjoying this as much as I thought I would like. So then I decided I'm going to go look for a new job. And I thought, this is true. I thought I was going to work at Starbucks because they look like they have fun. And I wasn't having fun.
They're always happy and always well caffeinated.
They are. Those are things I enjoy. And lo and behold, I worked when I was in court doing court reporting. There was this guy sitting next to me by the name of Dennis Hart. Ever heard of him?
Yep.
He was a reporter here at KMJ. And he said, you know, we're kind of looking for someone for a morning show. This is where Lorraine says, you know, someone that's looking for a job, refer them to your favorite place. He says, I really like working there. You should try working there. There's just somebody doing traffic. And if you don't like it, you can, you know, go to Starbucks because Starbucks is always hiring. We're not always hiring.
Lumberyard's always hiring.
So I thought, okay, fine. So then I applied for the job here. I didn't even really know what I was applying for. But Dennis said, it's a fun place to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. I apply for the job. It's doing traffic for the morning show.
Ugh.
And then Ray needed a producer. So you're doing traffic and you're Ray's producer. So Ray and I meet. Ray seems like a nice guy to me. No problem. I can work with nice people. And the rest is history. You know,
And you've been here how many years now?
More than 10. And this is like the longest place I've ever worked. More than 10. And it's like coming to work every day is like playing. I enjoy what I do. It's not a job. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what Dennis promised me it would be. It's a fun place to work. And that's so true. But people ask me all the time, like, how did you get to where you are? A couple of things. I showed up.
Yeah.
I showed up to work. I did a good job. People liked the job that I did, mm-hmm. and they just kept giving me more things to do.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. And I made a career out of something that literally was Christina opening up her flip phone to call everybody in it to see if anybody knew
somebody
that worked in TV. And that has led my career.
A flip phone. At least it wasn't like a Radio Shack bag phone.
And you know, Dennis obviously thought I did a good enough job to say to me, maybe you'd want to come work here. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's my whole entire career. And just people kind of say, you know, she's nice. She does a good job. Here we go.
But see, you don't get tipped in this job, though.
I don't get tipped in this job.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are perks to this job.
I make an hourly salary.
Yes.
Wage, not salary. Wage, excuse me.
Bottom line, show up, shut up, and do your job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, seriously,
if you can
show up on time mm-hmm. with a smile on your face every day, you don't even know how far that will get you.
Sure.
People do not understand how far that will get you in life.
Mm-hmm.
Show up and put a smile on your face. That's all you've got to do. And people want to see you succeed.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when you teach a class at Fresno State, yep. I'm sure you tell this to the students. I've gone and spoken to classes. You know, people want to see you succeed.
Absolutely.
They want to help you. They want you to do good. They are rooting for you.
And the biggest,
if they're rooting for you, all you've got to do is show up and be willing to learn and put a smile on your face.
And the rest, people
will do the hard work for you.
And the biggest lesson I impart, and I just, last day of classes at Fresno State was yesterday, so the semester is officially over. So the last nugget of info I imparted to my great MCJ 125 students was this, and they've heard me say it several times, and every student in every class I've had and every class to which I've spoken has heard me say this. If you don't believe in yourself, how the hell can anyone else believe in you? So if you believe that you can do it, you have the wherewithal to do it, that you should be given the opportunity, and that comes through, people are going to take a chance on you. If you have that go-getter attitude and say, hey, I might not have the experience yet. I'm willing to learn. I want to do this.
Willingness to learn.
Trainable, teachable, moldable, hireable is the end result of that sentence.
You know, when I got into NYU, okay, I got into the Tisch School of the Performing Arts. It's a very difficult school to get into.
You went to New Youngstown?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And people would say the difference between NYU and Juilliard is the people that go to Juilliard are like, they're professionals anyways.
Yes.
They don't really need the training. They're great at it now.
As Robin Williams described about his time in Juilliard, he was around some pretty severe people.
NYU doesn't want those people because they're not going to pay every year. They're not going to graduate. They need 4 years worth of you, right?
We need four years worth of checks out of
you. They're looking for someone with potential and a willingness to learn.
Sure.
And that's all. That's it. That's life to me. That's just everything about life to me. I tell my kids that too. You just got to be, open your ears. You'll do good.
Christina, here's the irony with that. Open your ears, a potential to learn and take opportunities. And now we're moving into high speed rail. The complete antithesis of everything that we've been espousing the last couple of minutes. They don't learn, they're not gonna learn, they're not gonna change, and they're not going anywhere.
So I saw this headline this morning when I came in, and it's just, you know, gosh, this one really gobsmacked me, Matt. I just didn't see this one coming. This is a headline from the LA Times, and Ralph Vardabedian has done an incredible job of following the high-speed rail story.
Keeping their feet to the fire.
Truly. Mm-hmm. And this headline, I'm sure this would be of no surprise to Ralph himself.
Or to anyone.
Or to anybody else.
In the valley, whatsoever.
This just floored me. Does California's bullet train have 5,000 workers? No. Well, I saw the headline and I just laughed because I knew living in the Central Valley, you know exactly what he is referencing.
Sure.
Because it's that big banner over that Stonehenge, the bridge, that says we've employed 5,000 workers.
Right. That hangs over that immobile graffiti artist canvas right there at Herndon and 99.
Exactly. And the answer is no. And we all knew that. This headline is of no surprise. When we come back,
maybe it's an aggregate.
When we come back,
the 25 years of high speed rail,
I want to get into the details of why it's a no, because we all knew it was a no. But do you know why it's a no and why they can put that number up there?
Because aggregate.
This is an incredible story.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The headline out of the LA Times today says, does California's bullet train have 5,000 workers?
No.
No. No. And when we get into the numbers of this, by the way, 490-5858, I've always called this the fancy train.
Mm.
Because it's a train. It's an Amtrak train. It's a glorified Amtrak train. It's fancy.
It won't necessarily be high-speed rail. It won't necessarily carry passengers.
It will not travel at high speeds.
And it won't be done when they said it was going to be done, when they said it was going to be done, when they said it was going to be done, when they said it was going to be done.
Correct. So, LA Times today.
Yes.
The State Rail Authority has never had anywhere near 5,000 jobs.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Duh.
The boast of 5,000 jobs refers to the number of workers dispatched from union halls.
Oh.
Each time a worker is sent to a job site, whether for one day or for hundreds of days, it counts as a job for the purpose of the banners.
Ah.
Nonetheless,
relations.
The ongoing employment on the project is just 20% of what the banners say at 1,000 carpenters, iron workers, operating engineers, and others. 1,000 total jobs.
Well, and my question is, I keep driving by all these sites for high-speed rail. Am I missing something, or are they missing pieces? This is kind of like...
Okay, so let's get into this.
When I was a kid and had Legos, and you're trying to follow the directions on Legos, and you look at the end result, and you look at the directions, and you're missing pieces because there's holes in it. We're missing some Legos here.
We're missing some Legos. Let's talk about those Legos, okay?
Sure.
So where has the majority of the state money gone? Because they're not going to pay these workers, and we'll get into those numbers in just a second.
Okay.
But the state has spent a lot of money that does not go towards hourly workers, but rather for, what you want to guess where it's been?
Administrative.
Consultants.
Oh.
Design changes. Remember, they constructed those. They designed those bridges the wrong way.
Yep.
They had to redesign the bridges.
Well, and then they had to tear them down and build them back.
Correct. claims filed by contractors for delays caused by the rail authority, and much else.
Well, and I'm sure there's also litigants because there are still people that are blocking the acquirement of parcels because the high-speed rail does not have all of the land it needs to connect said Legos from Bakersfield to Merced.
Correct.
Huh.
So while we have not employed 5,000 workers, it's more like 1,000, let's get into now those hourly numbers.
Okay.
Okay. The construction program has generated a total of 3.9 million hours between 2015 and the end of February. Hold on.
Okay.
Running about on average $66 per hour. I think Elon Musk pays that at the Tesla factory, to be honest.
Okay.
I do. I think Elon Musk at Tesla pays around $66 an hour.
Are they hiring? Well, no, I want that.
Always.
I want
that. They're always hiring.
Hey, I can recommend some people. Follow Lorraine Salazar's advice.
It means that hourly workers have received about $265 million of the, you ready for it? $6.1 billion that has been spent on construction that's just 4%.
Well, where's the, what?
But hold on.
Where's the 96?
That's between 2015 and February.
Okay.
A total of $8.1 billion has been spent on the project in total.
Yeah.
So those wages make up overall just 3%.
Okay.
Okay. So wages make up just 3% of what we are spending on to build high-speed rail.
I have a question.
The majority of it is going towards consultants, redoing mistakes, and lawsuits.
And I'm assuming some administrative fees, too.
And administrative
and
fees.
And paying the High-Speed Rail Board Authority.
Would you like to compare this to other projects in the state?
Yeah, how about that publicly funded high-speed rail from L.A. to Vegas?
So let's talk. Well, I don't have those numbers, but I do have this.
Okay, what do you have?
Infrastructure in the state. Infrastructure
projects. President Biden, lay it on me.
Well, it's a hot word right now. The largest state project highway project of $2.1 billion widening the 405 through Orange County spends about $1 million per day and has 1,000 union jobs on site every day, according to the figures.
Okay.
The bullet train spends $3.5 billion per day and has 970 jobs.
Million per day.
There was $2.1 billion for Orange County.
Right.
I'm sorry, $3.5 million for the Central Valley on high-speed rail.
Spent a day.
997 jobs in February.
Okay.
Okay.
So $3.5 million a day.
There's construction going on at LAX.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Their transportation hub.
Yep.
$5.5 billion project, $4 million per day, 3,450 workers per day.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's physical, tangible. You can see the work being done.
Yes.
Yes.
It's actually getting done.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I do see occasionally as I drive, because, you know, living in Madera and driving down the 99 and going hither and yon over the 145 and the 15.
You encounter all this.
I encounter all of this. Haven't seen one little stitch of track yet. I'm assuming that that eventually, I'm seeing some paths where the track might be. I'm assuming. But,
Matt.
Don't we have a deadline for this? And again, I believe that the privately funded high-speed rail between L.A. and Vegas will be up and running, celebrating its 10th year anniversary. I actually posed this question to Tony Maness before he left. I said, what will we see first, an astronaut on Mars or a high-speed rail in California?
Mars all the way.
It seems like
I'm with Mars all the way. I think Elon Musk will get somebody to Mars.
But here's the problem, Christina, that you mentioned, and I said, okay, Joe Biden, lay infrastructure on me. Old Uncle Joe and his infrastructure deal has got money for high-speed rail in there. Because, you know, Uncle Gav and Aunt Nancy, they've all got ideas on high-speed rail, and you can look into that if you'd like. But Uncle Joe is going to kick some money to high-speed rail. Is it going to get done faster? No, but so, more money's coming.
So you hear all of these numbers that I just ran through with you.
It's a joke.
Right?
It is a joke with a capital J.
The false narrative that we're being served here.
Fake news.
The last paragraph of the article reads, U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has praised the California California Bullet Train project and recently asserted the Biden administration's infrastructure plan would create 19 million jobs.
Way to go, Pothole Pete.
So I think Ralph Vardabedian at the end of that is just kind of hinting at they're trying to sell you on 19 million jobs for Biden's infrastructure plan. And you're being sold this false narrative in California that this high-speed rail has created 5,000 jobs. In actuality, only 1,000 people have received jobs.
I liken this to carpet-bagging snake oil salesmen in the post-Civil War era that are selling this as an end-all, be-all elixir that's going to do everything, and it ain't doing nothing.
We've got a minute. Let's take a quick phone call before we go to news here. So, Ralph, you're on KMJ.
Hey, Ralph.
Hey, good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Are you calling us from the high-speed rail train?
Yeah. I see the signs that they're talking about there along the 99. It says 5,000 and growing as far as employees. And then I was talking to, I remember you saying about it's only parts that completed. It's just, you can't see the remaining train, the remaining rail that's built. You just can't see it. It's invisible.
Oh, it's an invisible track. So, an invisible train will
so
ride
imagine
on it with
in
invisible
your
passengers.
Imagine in your mind.
Oh, good.
Ralph Serling, imagine if you will, the train is in your mind.
Focus on your third eye and imagine that train. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Whatever.
Okay, Ralph, that's it. But we're spending real money for the invisible project.
Yeah. It's real money for... It's kind of like, you know, the big push for NFTs, non-fungible tokens, shelling out cash for something you don't actually own. It's high-speed rail. Shelling out money we don't actually own. You can't actually see it, but the checks are being cashed.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
As we talk high-speed rail this morning, headline caught my attention. I've been waiting for this one. Does California's bullet train have 5,000 workers?
No.
No. No, it doesn't. And then we learn to find out. The boast of 5,000 jobs refers to the number of workers dispatched from union halls. In actuality, it's 1,000. And it's significantly less than any other infrastructure project in the rest of the state because the wages paid out is only 3% of the total money spent over the course of time.
Well,
the majority is administrative costs, consultants, claims and lawsuits, and redesign of bad design.
Oops.
It's just nuts. It's crazy. The story about high-speed rail keeps getting worse. It never gets better.
Right. It's just like the adage, who moves the goalposts more, Dr. Fauci and coronavirus or the high-speed rail board and their completion date? Which one moves more? Because it's shifted around. It's like, no, it's sort of like the line in the sand. You cross this line, you die. No, you cross this line, you die. No, you cross
this
line.
Oh, I know. Yes.
It's like, how many lines are you going to draw on the sand until we, stop giving you sand?
490-5858. Devin, it says that you're a general contractor for high-speed rail. So, good morning. You're on KMJ.
Hey, Devin.
Hey, good morning. Well, long story short, I was awarded a high-speed rail contract June of last year.
Okay.
Okay.
I completed 7 task order contracts. It's all prevailing wage. Paid all the labor. Paid all the contractors. I've never received a check. So all my jobs were signed off, no punch list, no issues. After the last project was completed, signed off, contract signed, everything were completed, they sent over a new list of requirements it would take me to get paid. They wanted me to certify all of the contractors that were approved that did work for me. That process takes anywhere from 4 to 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I involved Jim Patterson's office. They have sent out letters on my behalf. I won't accept any more contracts for high-speed rail. We are a woman-owned company. And I guess the long story short is I explained to High Speed Rail, they're not going to take advantage of a women-owned company. I believe they are taking advantage of contractors. Administratively, it's taking hundreds of hours just to fulfill all the requirements under these contracts. But the biggest deal is I don't know what their check looks like because I've not received one. And I think we're going on a year here
soon.
It's just a disgrace.
Well, and Devin, thank you for your call, 490-5850. And how many contractors have gotten burned by High Speed Rail? And how many contractors would, if they get that call or that knock on their door and it's High Speed Rail saying, hey, do you want to come work for us, would tell them no? Or it, and I say no, meaning I would use more colorful language.
Devin, I hope you get your money soon because
luck.
A year is ridiculous.
And I'm sure, I'm sure his is not the only case with High Speed Rail. And I would, you know what? I don't think I've ever met anyone that would defend High Speed Rail that wasn't in politics. I know Congressman thinks it's
so
great.
Let's see what OB has to say, because in my comments here, OB, it says that you have a positive comment about High Speed Rail. So I'm kind of curious where you're going with this. Good morning.
No pressure, OB.
I kind of feel the way, same as everyone else. It doesn't look on the surface like it makes financial sense to me. But from a personal point of view, I own industrial buildings, and one of my tenants for the past 5 years has been the surveying company that has done all the surveying for the High Speed Rail.
Sure.
And so I've had that nice, sizable rental income for 5 years, and they've employed local survey engineers, too. So that's my comment.
All right, OB.
All right, well, I get it.
OB, their checks don't bounce, do they?
Their checks don't bounce, but the surveying company is paying me, but they did say that they had a problem getting paid at one time from the state, that they had a problem. And so I guess my other little comment is Christine, let Matt get more words in.
I know, I'm sorry. It's just... You know,
okay.
Sorry.
She's just, when she gets on a roll on the fancy train, she just gets a yak.
I know, the fancy train is kind of my thing. Yeah, you're right, though. Obi, noted.
So basically what Obi just said is you're going off the rails on a fancy train. That's what he just said.
Ba-dum-tsh. DJ, you're on KMJ.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Now, I don't know if this is true. This is just what I've heard from some friends over in Hanford area. I was asking them about this big overpass that was kind of built out in the middle of a pasture, and they said, well, that's part of the High Speed Rail.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, well, it's just sitting there by itself with nothing connected on either end. And he said, yeah, and nothing ever will be. And I said, why? And he said, well, the state came in and tried to take the property from some of the farmers over there in Hanford. And they fought it, and then the state went ahead and declared eminent domain, and they started constructing this overpass out there. And then the people who own the property on either side of that, I guess their property went back to the time of the Spanish land grants or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when they went back to court, the court ruled that because they were not under California domain when the property was given to that family, that the state had no right to declare eminent domain on it.
Oops.
So the property sits there on both sides of it being farmed, and you've got this big overpass out in the middle of it that they put all this money into, and looks like they'll never be able to do anything else with it. Now, I don't know how true that is, but that's what I was told by a resident who lives in Hanford.
Right, and DJ, for God's sakes, do not give us more specific directions to this thing, because the taggers will be out. They'll descend like
Sarah,
locusts.
I know.
It's we're spending billions on concrete canvas.
And it was as if, too, part of the problem to me with this as well, and the reason costs have been driven up so much
just
is because... High Speed Rail was really trying to sweeten the deal and get every city on board.
Yeah.
So the rail was going through every city and going around,
well,
right?
But they brought within the promise of like the heavy repair yard.
Which has not been awarded.
Yep.
But, you know, they could have just run this down I-5. If you want a train between L.A. and San Francisco, go along a corridor that's already there. Instead, they took this train. This train cuts through people's properties. If you're a grower out there and this train's running through your property, you could have high-speed rail running down the middle of your property.
Yep.
And taking out a good portion of your land.
Valuable.
But not only that.
Agricultural space.
But not only that, though, you're having to now grow on both sides of the tracks.
Yep. And having to navigate and negotiate
money.
The construction site.
And if it's on the ground and there's no overpass, you're not going to go under. So to get around it is going to be one difficult feat.
Well, in their defense, they can kind of go over whatever it is because, A, there are no tracks and there's probably no
one
there.
Well, at this time, I mean, there might be at one another time. I don't know.
When your grandchildren's grandchildren are around, maybe. When you've got like GAR 7.5
or whatever. Do you mean when pigs fly? Is that what you mean?
Well, I don't want to insult pigs.
490-5858. Tracy, you're on KMJ.
Hey, good morning. You know, I was thinking about almost, I want to ask you to apply this, maybe this my piece of logic to anything that government does, is that they're really good at marketing, but they don't understand any economics or even any science or physics.
But they like spending your money, Tracy. They love spending your money.
Well, look at high-speed rail. They don't even have a plan. You know, they basically said that they want to take it across the pass that goes between Bakersfield and L.A., and yep. There is no way to do that. They're going to put a tunnel through there. Physically impossible to do. They want to go around and go through the desert, and there are measures there that will not allow that to work, mm-hmm. at least physically at this time.
Well, and then on the opposite side, they want to go over Pacheco, for crying out loud.
Well, that's another feat, too. I mean, you know, the thought process on this, well, nice. To me, I would have built the hardest part first, which would be, if you're going to take it over the Grapevine, figuring that out. If you're going to take it around the Grapevine, figuring that out.
Yeah.
To me, I would do not... I'd figure out the most difficult part first before I got to the other stuff.
Well, and then to Tracy's point, they want to go kind of through the granite or whatever that is between Bakersfield into L.A. We have these little phenomena in California called earthquakes, and there's mm-hmm. some fault lines kind of all through the L.A. basin. And even though they can dig a tunnel that connects England to France, you can't good luck connecting Bakersfield to L.A. Good luck.
Yeah.
Does it go up over?
Well, and that's the thing is I don't know.
Where does it go?
I don't know. I don't know if it's possible, but that's what I would have spent time figuring out. Instead of selling something, basically building Stonehenge in Central California.
And this is basically just Mel Brooks nailed it in Blazing. This got to do with where Choo Choo go, as Mongo once said to Sheriff Bart. And that's the joke. We don't know where the choo-choo's going to go.
Well, and where's that private investment they always talked about? Remember that?
It's building a high-speed rail from L.A. to Vegas.
Oh,
don't tell anyone.
Shh.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Kevin, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Hey, Kevin.
Good morning. I wanted to bring up a point when the project was first announced. The French National Railways, SCNSF, had proposed to the state of California that they would run the high-speed rail down I-5 because the state owns all that land.
Amazingly.
And they would do the tunneling through L.A. and they would pay for it.
Whatever happened to that?
Well, one of the state senators happened to claim that they collaborated with the Nazis during World War II while they occupied the country, that they were exempt from handling anything for the state of California.
So their defense was if they were Vichy collaborators in Nazi-occupied France, that precludes them from building high-speed rail in modern-day California.
I'm going to have to Google that one.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I believe that, but I'm also not sure I don't believe that.
Well, knowing what little I know about the TGV, which is the actual honest-to-God bullet train that runs through France, that wasn't around in the 40s. the Nazis didn't hop the bullet train to go down to Nice from Paris after they occupied it, because it wasn't there. So I don't know. But yeah, the whole notion of why the hell did it not go down the I-5 corridor? The state owned that land.
They needed the cities to be on board. They needed cities. They wanted the funding, the money. They wanted cities on board. And I think that in doing that, they way overcomplicated this.
And
they could have taken it down the I-5. I think that that's what made sense. I think that those of us here, I think that that would have made it affordable to people as well. Those of us in Fresno would have traveled to Harris Ranch to park our cars, right, and hop on the train to get to L.A. or San Francisco.
Sure.
We would have gone places for this train if it were affordable to do so.
Yes.
And what's going to end up happening, A, it's not going to be a high-speed train, and I don't believe it's going to be affordable. And this should have been number one. I don't think it's going to be completed.
Well, and think of the logic, too. You know, you've got Metro in L.A. You've got Metro in San Francisco. I know.
Yeah.
I personally, back when San Francisco was a decent place to visit, the family and I, we would park kind of in, you know, just on the outskirts and take the BART in.
Correct.
Right? Why couldn't we build light rail, connect Fresno to a high-speed rail station over the I-5?
There you go.
Fine, you know, go down.
There are so many better ideas out there than what we're doing at this
time.
Take
the 180 West and just parallel it. And you build a nice little hub downtown, and you hop on, you take the light rail over to the high-speed rail, nice little ample parking. It's revitalization of downtown. See, and, you know, or build it out where Running Horse was supposed to be.
And he came up with that, by the way, on the fly. Jess, you're on KMJ.
Huh. Morning, Jess.
Yeah, good morning. I was just wondering if we are the actual only state building high-speed rail, and if there's other states doing it, are they running the same problems that we are?
To my knowledge, California is the only state building a high-speed rail line at this time.
I know
that what the D.C.
Well, the
corridor,
Acela. Well,
the Acela.
But that's Amtrak, and that's supposed to be on existing lines running trains that can operate faster.
Yes.
But that is not necessarily dedicated high-speed rail. That's
correct.
About the only other equivalent. But you've got the public versus private, and I keep circling back to it because I'm looking forward to riding it when it's done very soon. Is the private high-speed rail line between L.A. and Vegas, connecting Los Angeles, City of Angels, and Sin City.
You're not going to take...
Privately funded and is ahead of schedule the last time I looked.
You're not going to take Southwest? I thought you were, you know, ready to get on board Southwest here.
I am.
With a quick 45-minute flight from Fresno to Vegas.
Yes.
And the planes don't fall out of the air.
Well, as I correctly predicted, Southwest came to Fresno. I was right. As I correctly predicted, I'm not going to be able to ride high-speed rail in my lifetime. And as I correctly predicted, high-speed rail privately funded is something that will happen between L.A. and Vegas. I'm 3 for 3.
All right, let's take one more quick call and before we say goodbye here. So, John, you're on KMJ. Good morning.
Hey, John.
And good morning. You know, before I get into it, somebody should look up pipe dream in Webster's Dictionary, pipe dream.
Okay.
The next big pipe dream is electric cars by 2040. You're going to see parking lots with 200 or 300 spaces and people waiting in line to get their cars charged if they're going more than 100 miles. These cars don't go 200 miles an hour, 75 miles an hour. They go about maybe two-thirds of that.
Well, I think you're right. I think in order to make electric cars a mass reality, a lot of stuff is going to have to be discussed in the state. For instance, our power grid.
Well, and what
is one simple
John,
thing
to your point, what you're going to see in those parking lots is you're going to see electric cars lined up to be powered by diesel generators.